Welcome to the Shift Extension Podcast. Sunny, Hannah. Hey, fellas.
Fellas.
I'm so used to being, I've just come off a week at a mine camp and it's all blokes. So you will be both addressed as fellas today.
Mm-hmm. Should we get your swear jar out, Lou?
Correct. Yeah, we should. How are you both going?
Well, I'm going really well. I'm in the middle of my swing at the moment. Sounds like Sunny, you've been feeling a little bit better.
I'm sick as hell, Hannah.
Yeah. You got that raspy voice.
I feel like I've been sick ever since we wrapped Respond. I think it was just all the excitement and all of the come down. No, my little girl's been unwell since then, and so I haven't had much sleep. But how good was Respond? I mean, it was 4 weeks ago that we met in Brisbane. How good was it?
So good. I can't believe it's been 4 weeks already.
I think it might have been five, four and a half.
Yeah, could. Yeah. It was incredible. And I think, I mean, Hannah, this is your first time being a part of it. So how did you feel getting up on stage?
Wow. Well, that was a big step for me, because, you know, it can be a little intimidating stepping in front of people and speaking for the sort of for the first time. But everyone there was super cool. It was actually the vibes were on, you know. We had a little bit of a interesting start, didn't we, Sunny? We had Professor Von Monotone start us off.
Oh, yeah.
It's cheeky. It's cheeky and it's controversial and it might even offend some people, but that's also okay because we are trying to do things differently, because all of us have had our own experiences through education, CPD and development, and all of us have a similar opinion and experience where things can be done differently. So yes, we did it differently. We told everyone that Respond would be a conference without PowerPoint, and that was not to do anything other than just try and bring back real speakers. My experience through my own education and even when I got into academia was watching so-called subject matter experts delivering really monotone sessions where they wouldn't even necessarily know the content, because they were evidently just reading off very, very content heavy slides. So we tried to do it differently.
Absolutely. What happened when you had a content heavy slide at Respond, Lou?
He was detained.
He was detained. He was arrested, wasn't he?
He was arrested. Yeah, he won't be coming back next year.
I don't know. He was a crowd favourite. I don't think we've ever seen a clinical conference quite started off like that. But where the promise was PowerPoint free, we had a little nerdy professor walk out onto the stage. He would have been about 9,000 years old. Professor Dullard Von Monotone, if you will. And he had 173 slides of the most boring content you can have. But very thankfully, and in true Respond style, he was detained for crimes against death by PowerPoint and escorted off the stage by a tactical team, and then the lectern removed.
Thank you, Stun HQ, for that.
Thank you indeed.
Little plug.
Stunt legends.
Yeah.
But Hannah, you started off with, you know, referencing intimidating coming out on stage. And that's awesome because I feel like the lectern is a place that people like to hide behind.
Creates comfort.
Yeah. So removing it in such a theatrical way, I think really spelt what Respond was going to be, the culture of it. It's going to be different.
Yeah. It set the tone for the day. That's for sure.
Yeah. And I think too, even just bringing something in like the music at the beginning is just a fun way to energize people, because there's no point doing something unless we're enjoying it.
Absolutely.
I don't even think I learn that well. Well, no, that's not true. I've certainly learned plenty of times what I don't want to do or what not to do from the wrong people. But I certainly learn a lot when I'm enjoying myself and having fun, because it reminds me of why I want to do things. But How good were the speakers as well? Because it's always a risk. And each one of
Yeah.
those speakers we had, we really challenged them. It's apart
Yeah.
from the fact you don't have a PowerPoint, you won't be hiding behind a lectern, you're going to be up there speaking like you're an entertainer. But the challenge was set to them not just to tell a story, but to give something very specific, like a gold nugget, like a ripe
Yeah.
banana, like something that someone can
Yep.
take away.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, a lot of the feeling behind stage or the vibe was a lot of people were feeling really nervous. And so I am incredibly proud of all our speakers for getting up, changing the status quo, not standing behind a lectern, being actually engaging with the crowd and speaking to their own lived experiences. I think each and every one of them should be proud of, what they did that day, because not a lot of conferences are doing that.
No, there's a big difference between a research-driven conference, which, I mean, let's face it, we need evidence-based practice, but with so much emphasis on that, we really forget about the other half of what we do, and it's the human side of things, you know.
Correct.
And this is why I think it's so important too, you know, Hannah. I feel intimidated every time I step out on that stage. You know, people amuse me because sometimes I think they look at me like I'm an old hat. You know, like I've done this so many times that nothing's going to faze me. I mean, look, coming in on stage dressed as someone too, sometimes that is even more intimidating, but it's also comforting because you can hide, you know, who was Professor von Dullard Monteux? We will never
He
know.
looked a lot like
No.
Sonny,
We will
actually,
never
now that I remember. Maybe it was a mustache.
know. Can't confirm nor deny.
But I actually find it really intimidating because you're out there in front of everyone like you've got something to say. And even after all this time, I still feel like an imposter clinically. I feel like an imposter educationally. And I feel like an imposter even trying to put on something like Respond. I even feel like an imposter having a podcast that nearly 100,000 people listen to. I think it's madness. But it is a testament to sometimes if you build it, people will come. If you create it,
Absolutely.
some people will support it. But I would love to hear, Hannah. I mean, we went through an entire day of clinically relevant CPD in probably the most entertaining way that's been brought to Australia in a decade. Was there a particular speaker that spoke to you or their message to you was something that you really took away to your own independent practice?
Oh, wow. There were so many good speakers. And I think they all came from different areas of our work. I think sometimes we think pre-hospital medicine is a one-track sort of career pathway, but we, for Respond, really tried to focus on creative careers and new ideas. And there were so many people from the creative careers area. We had people who worked on film sets on motor tracks. We had people that worked in mines, people with dual degrees. We had, so many different people. It was really cool to see. I think one of the biggest takeaways for me was seeing these people apply their passion into their profession. So everyone had their own passion that they brought in, and had molded their career by, finding something they love and adding it to something that they really cared about as well. And that was, for me, one of the biggest takeaways overarchingly, because that was, just the theme that I seem to see between all of our amazing speakers, that they brought their passion into their profession. Like, we had snakes there. We had Matt there, and he loves snakes, and now he does education about that in the pre-hospital space, about snakes and about toxinology. Is that right, Lou? Toxinology? What's the difference between
That's correct.
toxicology and toxinology, by the way?
Toxicology is in relation to, I believe, medications, and then toxinology is in relation to like your venoms and I think like your plant related poisons. Is that right, Sonny?
I'm literally looking it up as we speak so that I can sound far more educated than I was, but
Yeah, I
because
know.
you didn't give me the time. Toxins are naturally occurring molecules. Whereas Toxicology. Oh, and it's gone. I can't see it. Okay, hold on.
man-made?
Toxins are often distinguished from other chemical agents by their method of production. I'm not helping, am I?
No, there is a distinct a difference between the two. And I did ask Matt on stage, I believe
Yes.
that was one of the questions at the end, was, hey, can you explain the difference? We obviously didn't retain that.
Well, that's
So we held
okay
on
though.
after.
There was a lot going on during the day.
You know
But I
what?
think what I
That's.
was trying to get to was the fact that he has brought his passion for his snakes and now creating an educational space for us who obviously, like, I don't know very much about snakes, but if I picked his brain, I might hopefully retain some things.
Oh yeah, totally.
I
Yeah,
think
I think.
that's a really valid point, though, is because these days are not you're not supposed to come away with remembering absolutely everything.
No.
And that's also the problem with a lot of standardized conferences is there's just such a tidal wave of information thrown at you from every single presenter that you really do struggle sometimes to understand what's important or what's important to you to develop and remember. But it I think in regard to Respond being different, you nailed it by bringing passion back into the profession. Now, this can also be a little bit controversial because in order to bring in some of your passions in your profession, you've got to go outside of the status quo. You've got to go outside of the box that everyone's used to practicing in, and you do have to start operating in arenas that I guess are not standard yet, but where everything begins as controversial. When more people support it, more people get behind it, and more people are involved in it, it actually becomes a little bit more accepted and a little bit more standardized. And I also think Respond as a conference is going to do something very similar in the clinical education space because we didn't just have paramedics in the crowd. We had nurses, we had doctors, we had some allied health, we had students, we had retired clinicians, we had non-practicing, we had educators, we even had a couple of emergency response officers in the crowd. And it was such an eclectic mix of people who I think were curious to see how it was going to run as a conference because we advertised it as being so different. Having people like Matt come out on stage, he's a paramedic, he's a toxin, well, he's a toxinology nerd. He wanted to really emphasize that. He's not a toxinologist, he's a toxinology nerd. It's one of his interests. And he's blending those two. But to have a speaker come out on stage holding a rare snake,
That was very cool.
it was very cool. And to have that session just before lunch where afterwards everyone can actually go and get their hands on if they want,
It's
was
very
also,
engaging.
well,
Do you
it
remember
was.
that snake's name was Sunny as well?
Was it?
It
I
was.
never got to hold Sonny. What a pity.
Oh.
But, talking to Matt after the conference too, it was a couple of weeks after, he said that the opportunity he had to actually network and collaborate after that session has exceeded anything that he's done before because we had elements of, entertainment and elements of humanism in those events that people felt comfortable to come up and talk afterwards and really network. And
Yeah,
I think that's part of the real world connections that we've also been trying to promote. None of us were even sure if this conference was going to work, whether we would sell enough tickets, whether we would have enough sponsors. And it's brand new. You know how many people we had through the door?
Ooh, how many?
The theatre that we chose, we deliberately chose it because it's an entertainment s precinct. It's different to every other conference venue you'll go to. But we had 118 people come through the doors.
That's amazing.
That's incredible for
It really
a
is.
brand new event. And that's really with not a whole lot of advertising either. I think next year is going to be bigger and better. But Lou, we had, what do we have, 8 or 9 speakers plus I think we had about 14 sessions in the end. What's something
We
that
had
stuck
a
with you?
lot. Well, I mean, obviously Matt. I mean, that's a like a good talking point because I love snakes, and I think Matt realized that. And I just found that to be so different. And when I was watching Matt talk, the entire crowd was captivated by him, either because they were shit scared because he was holding a real live snake and there was another one on the stage moving about, or because what he was talking about, so many people could, I guess, relate or connect to. And I think all of our speakers had that. They brought that to the stage where we were all interested in what they had to talk about, because a lot of it was the unknown for so many people. We had someone get up on stage and literally put on a suit that you would wear at, a motocross circuit, what you would wear in those cars that, that was, I guess, fire retardant. We had someone get up on stage and actually wear that suit. Where do you get to go to a conference and see what these people are wearing in their day-to-day working life? So I think the difference, the point of difference for us and all our speakers is, like what you said, Hannah, they are able to showcase their passion and how they've turned that or used that to help with their profession. So I think it's really hard for me to pinpoint one exact thing that I loved, because everyone just brought a little bit of a different element that I could learn or, I guess, come away going, wow, I never thought of it like that. So for me, it wasn't that there was any one particular speaker that I loved. They were all fantastic, but I just came away from that entire day going, wow, I've got a lot to reflect on now. And
Yeah,
that's, I think, a lot of,
absolutely. I also hear that you had to referee a fight, Lou.
I did. I
Yeah,
did.
tell us about that.
So we had Professor Sandy Macquarie and the amazing Andy Bell go head to head in a real live academic battle on stage, and to see those two guys. So they didn't get to choose. So for the context for people listening who weren't able to make it to the conference, and hopefully next year you will, we had a live debate with two incredible paramedics who have, over 10, 20 years experience in the profession, get up on stage and debate topics that they couldn't choose if they were for or against. So we didn't give them that option. And so it really got them out of their comfort zone and got them thinking about other perspectives and other ways of thinking about controversial topics. So they both did a fantastic job. And they were able to, I guess, put themselves in a different perspective about a topic that they did not agree with. And they both executed it so well. I think we're going to do that again because there was a lot of really good feedback from the crowd about how different that was to see them debate topics that you could tell they really didn't agree with, but we enjoyed watching them squirm. So
Absolutely. And they
I
came
think
out
it
kitted
was,
out and everything. They came out with their
they
boxing
sure
gloves
did.
ready to
I was in my
go.
ref uniform. We spared no expense for that.
No, it's just a super fun way of showcasing in the clinical space. It should actually be okay to disagree. When everyone falls into a box and agrees on something, hopefully the evidence is behind it. But there's also new evidence being, brought out every single day. So even something that was widely accepted, even something like, hard collars, for example, everyone was using them. And the first people to actually query why they were being used is 15 years ago now. Were not just castigated, they were called troublemakers. You fast forward 15 years, and there's new evidence that actually has now removed those from just about every service in Australia. So I think we need to remember that you can have multiple perspectives, and they're equally professional, they're equally weighted, and we should have the ability to listen respectfully. And debate these topics because we just don't see enough of it. But to bring them out in, boxing robes and boxing gloves, I think just added that little theatrical flair for people to really just enjoy themselves. You got two academic heavyweights in pre-hospital care who have put themselves out there to be extraordinarily vulnerable in front of everyone and debate topics that are already controversial, but then put them onto a side they don't even necessarily agree with. The feedback we've had from that session, it eclipses, a lot of things. But I also just really need to acknowledge, both Sandy and Andy. Gee, it sounds like a band, doesn't it? Sandy and Andy.
Andy and Andy.
Because if you want to look for leadership in clinical education and clinical academia, those two are the epitome of that. They are both so different. They come from such varied and different backgrounds. Yet they both have equal respect for each other enough to get on stage and actually debate the topics. We've got to do that again, Lou. That's it was
Oh,
too
100%. Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, it's funny talking about being vulnerable. I feel like that was a little bit of a theme, an unexpected and unplanned theme for the entire conference was feel it's okay to feel vulnerable.
Well, we got rid of the
And
lectern. They couldn't hide.
exactly.
We
Yeah,
got rid of
and that's
the
it.
speaking aids.
Yeah, we actually had an entire panel with four incredible speakers. Oh, Hannah, you were one of them. And the common theme was kind of around vulnerability and how do we overcome it. So we sort of made that a bit of a theme without really intending to, I suppose, for Respond.
Intended or it's certainly not deliberate. We don't want to make people vulnerable.
No.
But something, one of the differences with Respond as well, and we're really going to emphasize this moving forwards. We knew that we had selected a couple really strong speakers. We need strong speakers, you know, people with real tangible experiences, tested and proven. But we also had quite a heavy percentage of first-time speakers and new clinicians. You know, some of the people who got up to speak have only been out on the street for, you know, 1.5, 2, maybe 3 years. And so to put them in front of their peers at an academic conference, a professional conference, was incredibly confronting for them. And look, some of them genuinely didn't want to do it. They were too vulnerable, there's too much imposter syndrome, and they genuinely didn't want to. The reason why we really wanted them there is because they are trailblazing new areas of pre-hospital care. They are not following the status quo. And so whilst they don't even have any what we would call in the industry, you know, tangible, real experience, they've got their own very unique experience. So they're actually vulnerable in two areas. The irony is that two of these speakers who were probably the most nervous about getting up in front of everyone and speaking actually smashed their sessions out the water. The feedback from people who listened has been phenomenal. And so it's interesting, Lou, because it's not a deliberate theme. We don't want people to be vulnerable. But two of the most nervous people we had speaking were actually two of the most high performing in the end and two of the most impactful. And I find that's interesting.
It is. It's really interesting. And you think about all this untapped talent, you know, across Australia, just across Australia, that would be great to get up on that stage and hear their experiences. And it is very different to how a lot of conferences do run because you're often looking at speakers who, you know, academically are incredible, have 10, 20 years experience. But there are all these people out here who have only been in the industry for 1, 2 years, 3, and they are so creative and they use their passion to go, hey, I love my job, but I can see gaps where this can improve or I can integrate things that I really enjoy in my own life. So I think we're able to find a lot of great speakers out there who probably normally wouldn't say yes, but had really interesting, captivating things to discuss that I think inspired a lot of thought with our, my gosh, guests that day. Sorry, my brain.
You referenced the speaker who came out in their PPE suit, the fire retardant suit. I've never seen one of these before in literally, you know, 20 years out there working. It was amazing for me to see. This was Nicole Morris.
Yeah, it was. She
What's
asked
that?
me to get her early. She said, I need to do a change. And I said, are you doing a Beyonce change? And she's just like, you just wait.
But isn't it interesting because seeing her come out on stage in that uniform is something so foreign to what any pre-hospital clinicians I've seen, whether nurses, doctors, or paramedics. It's such a foreign uniform because it is so specific to the job she's doing. But something that I found so interesting that she was speaking about is that, you know, most pre-hospital clinicians, most paramedics out there who go to 100 kilometer an hour head on will be expecting to find casualty, not casualty, sorry. I'm trying to think of the word for dead people. What's the word for, help me out? I'm dyslexic.
Fatalities.
Thank you. I was never going to get there. I need more
You're
sleep.
welcome.
They would
Fine
be
here.
expecting fatalities at 100 kilometer an hour head-ons. That's fairly standard. And one of the things that she was saying is because of the environment she works in, it's not uncommon for her to go to crashes that exceed 300 kilometers an hour, and they're actually walking people out of the wreck sometimes. And it should infringe on everything you think is professionally responsible of a clinician to do. But when she unpacked the way the vehicles are set up to protect the drivers, the way the drivers are wearing their own equipment to protect them, it's actually not uncommon for them to walk away from some of the most confronting crashes you would
Oh.
expect to see. And she shared one with us. I mean, how wild was that photo, Anna?
Yeah, they were crazy photos.
It didn't look like a car.
No, it was
And
just rubble.
she's in there extracting someone from it. And then she also had the helmet on stage, and I think she actually showed you how to separate.
Yeah, she did. She gave me a demo on how to hold it to start because it's got multiple different pieces and it sort of fits in together and clips in. It's nothing like I've ever seen before on road. You know, you've got your standard sort of straps around here, but it's a full neck brace that clips into the sides. So even taking that off is, a specialty skill in its own.
That we don't get taught at university, And also, I want to point out that we're also not trained to think that someone's going to really survive a high mechanism crash like these people are. So Nicole's had to shift the way that she thinks about responding to these accidents and go, there's a really good chance that due to the engineering of these cars, they are going to survive. So she's got to change the way she thinks about the injuries and the mechanism and all that stuff too. So it's just a whole other way of thinking as a pre-hospital clinician too.
And if you use that as the example too, circling back to Matt who came out with the snakes around his shoulders, I've seen other events where people come out with snakes on their shoulders, and often they're talking about the reptile, they're talking about, the poison or the mechanism. What I found interesting, and there's actually some feedback here from a bunch of people who attended Respond that I'll share with you. But this piece about Matt really struck me too is Matt didn't talk about snakes. He brought them out as something that he's interested in and he studied and he works with. But he used it as a tool to actually talk about fear in the profession. And I found this session really impactful, even to my own career, even now, because he talked about how fear can control the narrative and it can control your judgment and it can even control the way you approach something. And he was talking, about strategies to not just control your fear, but manage your fear. And interestingly, Lou, you said you love snakes. And so this was something that you wanted to get involved in. For anyone listening, Lou would not let Hannah or I introduce Matt. She had to be on stage with him. That was her non-negotiable.
I
But
would
I'm to
also
wear a
like to
snake,
bring up,
but yeah.
oh, sorry. I would also like to bring up backstage. I definitely met vet nurse Lou and her vet nurse voice, and it
It's a
was
thing.
we were having a good time back there with the snakes, and we can definitely see how good you are with all the animals.
I wondered where you
Oh,
two were. I was out the front trying to manage the conference. I'm like, where are the
sorry.
girls? Sorry.
We ditched you for Sonny the Snake.
Yeah, better things to do.
But interestingly, one of the attendees has sent us some feedback. And I'm gonna read it almost verbatim because it is kind of funny. Thanks for putting on such a unique event. I just need to say I shat myself well and truly when Matt came out with the snake on stage. I hate snakes. It made my skin crawl, and I was in the second to closest row. I assumed it was going to be like all of the other snake talks I've seen before, where they want to talk about these idiot animals, they want to make people more familiar with them, and they try and get people from the crowd to touch them. What I found, though, was someone who has had so much professional reflection in his job that he's managed to use the snake as a tool. And even with all of my fear, I actually had to rethink why I was even scared of the snake when he came out. So Matt's ability to turn a snake and a fear of snakes into a clinical learning tool that's actually made me a better person has actually made me almost curious about snakes.
Wow, that's powerful.
Wow.
Hey, that's what we said at the start. The whole point is leaving a better clinician. And if a snake can do that and a speaker, that's powerful.
After reading so much of this feedback, we've been really promoting, essentially education through entertainment. Come and get your CPD somewhere you enjoy. And what I actually think we've created is not an area where we want to sell CPD like everyone else. There is CPD. There's no, obviously you're going to come and you're going to get hours and hours of CPD. But rather than selling just another CPD event, I think we're actually selling an event that makes people better. And there's an irony to that because of all the other conferences I've been to in my life, I'm not saying all of them were rubbish, but there's a lot of them that I didn't leave better. I left confused and I left bamboozled, and I left really tired. But I think we're creating an environment where people are genuinely going to leave just that little bit better because there's something that a speaker is going to say that they're going to take with them.
Yes, that connects with them.
There was another piece of feedback about Andy Bell. You know, Andy was involved in the Great Debate, but earlier than that, he was certainly involved in Block One, the first one of the first couple of sessions we had, and he was talking about mentoring from a tormentoring perspective. And there's actually some feedback here from a senior clinician. Listening to Andy Bell actually made me dive deeply into how I've supported those junior to me, and I put my hand on my heart, moving out of Respond 26, and say, I was tormentored and I've passed on tormentoring. And I'm moving away next week to actually talk to my underlings. I shouldn't use that word, like they're equal with me. I thank Andy for giving me such a deeply insightful session. I can't believe it was only 15 minutes that's changed the last 15 years of my practice.
Wow.
Wow.
How's that? How's that? 15 minutes, that's all it took.
For someone to literally deeply reflect on what they've been doing and decide, moving out of this conference, I'm going to do things differently.
Yeah, I'm going to be a better clinician. Change my
That's
language.
our next speaker.
Yeah,
If
absolutely. Let's hear. Yeah.
that prepared to, that's a 27, that's a Respond 27 speaker right there.
I agree. I absolutely
Wow.
agree. And I'd love to hear how they've changed their practice and their communication. Yeah, that's powerful.
I didn't catch some of it. Now, obviously, the three of us were moving in and out and about. We were backstage, we were preparing speakers or introducing speakers. So I very unfortunately missed most of Jack's. And Jack's has had some amazing feedback. And Jack's also, I heard a lot of laughter coming from the audience. I've since watched shorts of Jack's presentation. And I find Jack's interesting because we wanted someone to come and speak from the private sector, the industrial region of ParaMed. But Jack is a unique person because he started in the mining sector while he was waiting for a real job. He then got his real job and bounced into his real job. And then after several experiences, he actually bounced back into his mining job and what he now defines as his professional job. Jack, one of his stories that actually made me laugh out loud while I was editing some of the footage was, he moved from the private sector into a jurisdictional ambulance, and he'd been working for a while, and he enjoyed it. It's not to say he didn't enjoy it, but there were just several experiences that certainly made him reflect on what his future looked like. And he talked about a particular case where he said, as a junior clinician and a solo clinician, when he was greeted by the smell of the scene, it was offensive enough to make him want to die inside. But he's new and he's junior and he's got to show that he's got the fortitude. So he's in there trying to treat, and the backup crew who actually came, both of the experienced clinicians actually ended up outside vomiting. So his backup, who is also slightly senior, can't even cope. But whilst he was assisting extricate this person with another clinician, he managed to tear a glove, and then unfortunately, I still don't quite understand how, but certainly some body fluids managed to make their way inside Jack's PPE, and he really used this as an ex a personal reflective experience to say, there must be something else out there that I could be doing right now. And reflecting on what he had done before he joined a JAS, which is very, very, very clinically focused, he was actually in a role that was very, very heavily rescue focused. So you still need clinical skills, but there are all of these other non-clinical skills that he was learning: high voltage rescue, underground rescue, breathing apparatus, confined space, vertical rescue. And he realized that they were exciting skills to hold. They were exciting skills to maintain. Part of his CPD that he needs to do every year now is actually maintaining competencies in these things. And so Jack actually used those as a lateral move back into where he was, and now he's really promoting, the private sector professional space for paramedics, because that's where he's found his people, that's where he's found his tribe. But Jack delivered it in such a humanistic way that, we got a lot of feedback here from people too, saying, I've been in that situation Jack has been in. I've literally reflected on it, but I didn't know where the outlet might be. And now I feel inspired or empowered to actually explore other areas of the profession. And I mean, that's impact. You know, they're not necessarily saying, I hate what I do and I've got to do something different. That's not the message. The message is just, let's bring some people together from our community of pre-hospital clinicians and talk about what is possible. Because there's jobs that didn't exist 5 years ago that people are doing that people need to hear about.
Yes, I agree.
The road less traveled, hey?
It's the
Let's
road
hear
less
about it.
traveled. It's the road less traveled until it becomes the norm.
Yeah, that's
And then it
it.
professionalizes.
Yeah, I'm bummed I didn't get to hear his speech, but I definitely will now because we're going to re be releasing the videos of our speakers as well, right?
Yeah, we got a lot of shorts coming out, and then there'll be an opportunity for people to actually access Respond 26 through a paywall because let's face it, we had to front up a lot of money to put on that event. We need to recoup it if it's going to be sustainable. But it is just a way that people who couldn't travel can actually still access that content, log their CPE, and actually listen to some of these amazing presenters. One of the probably most talked about afterwards, at the post-conference drinks, was actually Chloe.
Oh, Chloe's was amazing.
Did you expect her introduction?
So you gave me a little bit of a heads up, right? When we were going through who we were introducing, you said, "Oh, Hannah, look, Sunny's, sorry, Chloe is going to come out and do something pretty cool." And I was like, "All right, I'll give her a wide berth." And she came out and absolutely rocked the stage. I couldn't believe it. I'm very glad that I gave her space, though. She looks like she could do some damage with that staff of hers.
Chloe, I think, also was so impa I mean, apart from coming out on a clinical stage with a bow staff and whipping it around like a ninja turtle, it took people from by surprise. But you've literally got a professional clinician out on stage there who's also become a professional in another industry, and she's used those to merge, you know. So this is one of those jobs that didn't exist 10 years ago, is paramedics working on film and TV sites, and not just low budget ones. Chloe was talking about sets where she's working with Jack Black and Ice Cube and Mark Wahlberg and some of the biggest Hollywood A-listers out there. But she wasn't using it to brag about the situation she's been working in. She actually used it to talk about some of the most challenging circumstances she's had to work in, where people are really put at risk because of budgets, where production companies have put $1 million into that one day of filming, and then a cyclone erupts out in the Coral Sea and comes south and impacts it. There's a lot of pressure on the production team to keep filming with only one clinician on site to actually look after everyone if everything goes wrong. And then she was also talking about some of those instances where the money that's been put into the day is actually almost the emphasis over safety. And it's, any production company out there would say, no, that's not true. Right. But I've been in these situations before too, where there is so much peer pressure from the executives to keep things moving because of what they've invested into it. And being, I mean, I'm mid 40s, so I'm a lot more stoic than I used to be in my 20s. But being a 20-year-old clinician can be really confronting when you've got all of these high-powered executives saying, we will continue. To be able to put your foot down and say, no, this is unsafe. Is actually that takes a lot of character, and it takes a lot of character to talk about it because most of your clinical education will never touch on what to do in that circumstance. And yet we've got professional pre-hospital clinicians and paramedics being put in that exact circumstance. Having someone like Chloe come down and actually talk about it after whipping a bow staff around the stage and actually talk about stunts is really empowering to me.
And it's where a lot of paramedics are going to go and work as well, because that type of pressure extends further than production on a film set. And it really goes against everything that we're taught as paramedics, where we are encouraged to, make sure the disposition for this patient is the best that it can be. And I just think that she ha having her come and talk is so empowering to so many other young clinicians or aspiring clinicians that want to work in this space, to go like, you can do it, even if you are a bit younger or whatever it might be. I found that to be really powerful, because it is a hard space to be in when you're a clinician and you've got managers or executives standing above you going, no, you're not taking this patient off site for these reasons. And you've got to turn around and go, well, hang on, buddy. For these reasons, we need to
Hit him
get them
with the
off site. So,
buddy.
yeah.
Yeah.
That is something that I never thought I'd face, but now I am. And I think a lot of other clinicians, nurses, paramedics, whatever it might be, are going to be facing this, and they're going to be facing it within the next few months, years
Yeah.
of the profession developing.
Even look at Shanae. Shanae came down,
Yeah.
and everyone was curious. This girl's going to be talking about a Himalayan expedition she came back from leading. Wow, expedition medicine. Let's hear about it. And what did she talk about? Conflict.
Conflict.
That was a good
Yeah.
one too.
Conflict resolution. Her 2IC was undermining what needed to get done in an extremely volatile and vulnerable situation. And she needed to have enough fortitude to put her foot down and say no. This person is acting unsafe. They're supposed to be my 2IC. And they're actually now last on the rung of ladder in terms of usefulness and importance. And that takes, wow, that takes courage.
Yeah, that's her speech was very eye-opening and challenging to hear at times, but I think a lot of people came away from that going, how would I manage that situation if I was in it? I think it probably created more questions in a lot of people's minds to go away and go, hang on, but what are the strategies that I could use? So I really appreciated hers because it resonated a lot with me too, as someone who
How
doesn't work in the normal paramedic space.
the question you just said is you came away, and a lot of people, how would I manage that? That has come up so many times from Steph Curtis's talk.
Oh, yeah.
How would
Steph,
I manage that? Hannah, how would you manage a patient in an airplane deteriorating to a point where death is the most likely outcome?
Her talk was absolutely amazing, and I think it really shows a level of skill that is non-clinical. It's thinking about like your it's more about resource management, right? And also knowing the laws in different countries to know that no, it's not best if we stop here, or it's actually a better outcome for the family if this person was to pass in flight, or all of these logistics around, international affairs and delivering pre-hospital medicine internationally whilst retrieving someone. It was such an interesting talk to hear about all of the things that you're managing besides someone who's become critically unwell, and you're potentially having to give them quite a lot of attention clinically, but you have to manage this massive scene that expands beyond your aircraft, it expands beyond the
It's
country
everything
you're in.
else. It's everything else. I think
Logistics of it all.
that there's a theme here, Lou, and originally we were talking about potentially it being vulnerability, but after talking to you two about, I mean, this is our first proper debrief since the conference. So, 4.5 weeks later, I feel like the theme evolving from all of these is we're using clinical experiences to unpack non-clinical skills and requirements and abilities to actually perform the clinical roles that pre-hospital clinicians are required to do.
Yeah, it like goes around, doesn't it?
We're using clinical experiences to emphasize non-clinical skills that we need to adapt, learn, and understand to do our job better. Wow.
That's
For me, and this is still a little bit triggering, but Andrew Tagg.
Goosebumps. Absolute goosebumps. He spoke and you could hear a pin drop. He was,
Oh, couldn't you? I think my jaw was down too, and I even knew what he was going to talk about. And I still tip my hat to Andrew because, one, he's such an encouraging person in the profession that, one of the most encouraging I've come across for so many reasons. But to be able to use such a personal, tragic, and confronting experience of his own to then reflect and educate others. I just found this so moving because, he spoke when he first, coined it to me too. I want to speak about the last conversation you have. Oh, what's that? Well, it's in a pediatric arrest when things haven't gone to plan. How are you going to speak to the parents? Because they will remember that conversation for the rest of their lives. No one has ever said that to me in 20 years. And this is a powerful thing to listen to. And it's also tricky because we're trying to build a conference that's, entertaining and enjoyable because that's where we're going to learn the most. But equally, we need to be challenged. And this was such a challenging situation that, I said to Andrew, if you've got the courage to share this, well, we've got to have the courage to give you a platform to do it. But even then, I didn't know how personal this actually was. I was under the impression it was coming from a clinician's perspective. He's a pediatrician. He's probably had these conversations with people, but it actually came from his own personal experience of how people spoke to him. And without criticizing, because that was not his intention, but how poorly it was managed. And I think the reason why this triggered me so much and why I took so much from this too is because, nearly 8 years ago, I was dispatched to my own daughter. This is my little girl who's been going through so many rounds of chemo for a cancer and a disability that doesn't exist. And she's such a complicated little human who's gone through more pain in her life than most adults could ever comprehend. I was dispatched to my own house to a then 2-year-old anaphylaxis. And I knew immediately it was my daughter. And I'm not going to go into, the specifics of the case, but what I will say is the way it was handled operationally was awful because it wasn't just I had to request additional support. So there's an expectation I could just respond to that case myself. It was that after we had successfully and with another crew got my little girl and my wife to hospital and got my other kids looked after, there was an expectation that I was just going to go back into the vehicle and finish my shift. I could not believe how poorly it was managed. And so I used a lot of my own personal experience through this while listening to Andrew talk about how poorly it was managed with him to really dive deeper in how we need to support each other. Pre-hospital care has got to be one of the hardest jobs on the planet. And I think there's too much expectation out there of either, suck it up, you're going to be okay, to we've educated you enough, you've got this. And I think we just need to learn to support each other better.
I think one of the most powerful things from Andrew's speech, and he did share a very, very powerful story, but he took his experience. And then he affected change in that space as well. He took that experience and then he made it better. He unfortunately found himself in an experience later on in his career, but in to compare the two were apples and oranges, he sort of said. Like he was brought into the conversation, and without acknowledging or realizing who he was actually the preceptor of the doctor running the arrest scenario again. So he had taught that person the lessons that he had learned from his first experience,
Wise.
which I think was one of the biggest things that I took away from his speech is he took this massively, painful, powerful story and then affected change in his profession from it. And then, well, I mean, I don't know if you could say fortunate to go through it again, but witnessed the change with his own eyes, in his own experience. Massive, absolutely massive to see what that's the impact that that's had.
It was such a moving presentation. And I mean, the irony is, we're really unpacking some of these. All of these are 15-minute presentations. Without the PowerPoint, it's just literally listening to speakers share a story where it humbled them, they learned something, or that they've got something really real, really real, really real to share. Do you want to hear some of the feedback we got from some of the participants?
Yeah, of course.
Yes, I really do.
The speakers were outstanding, but the way the program was put together really stood out for me too. It challenged many of my assumptions and it really encouraged me to question why we are doing some of the things the way we still do. That's cool. Respond reminded me why I even wanted to do this job in the first place. I think I've been in a reasonably dark place for a while, and I found this to be really energizing, thought-provoking, and actually, weirdly, in some way, fun. That was the purpose. Way.
Well, did you
Educating through
have fun?
entertainment. This one made me laugh because we had I've come back from conferences in the past asleep because I've just eaten food and I've literally just expended all my energy trying to listen to some things that are difficult. And so I always come back half asleep after conference lunch. I don't know what you girls are like, but that's me. But so we had some musicians, we had some drummers, and they beat the roof off the place. I mean, we had PPE in the kit bags just in case, and we actually neglected to tell people it was there. I mean, everything in our conference bag was there for a reason. But we had to just fill a very small gap between, you know, when they could pack up the drums and when the stage would be clear. And so we stuck a ping pong ball in everybody's bag with a Sharpie because every pre-hospital clinician needs a Sharpie. And it was just a really simple demonstration, you know, of trying to throw these balls in a bucket. I mean, how much fun was that, Hannah? I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I had a great time. To be honest, you hadn't given me any brief about what was happening. So I was just there with you along for the ride. And this was actually a really cool metaphor that you're about to explain.
Well, here's me now confessing. You didn't know what was going to happen. I also didn't know what was actually going to happen because I had the idea in my head, but it had never really been done or proven before. So it was, how do you practice seeing if 100 people can throw a ping pong ball at a bucket all at once? I don't think it's something you can rehearse. So.
I mean, it came off flawlessly. So, Sonny, you got people to throw from their seats, write their name on a ping pong ball and throw it to a bucket. And you know, it's not too far away, but there weren't any ping pong balls
It
that
was
made it
chaos.
into the bucket. It was absolute chaos. It was raining ping pong balls. And
What have
then,
you learned?
well,
That they're really
after
difficult to
this,
clean up.
yes, they are.
Yeah.
So after the ping pong balls landed on the stage, Sonny went down and he grabbed one of the ping pong balls. And he pulled that person up on stage. And from where the ping pong ball landed, he then said, "Now try and throw it in the bucket again." And this time the participant was able to get it into the bucket. And then we were like, "Okay, cool, fun experience." But Sonny came out with something super profound. He said, "Do you think you would have been able to get the ping pong ball in the bucket from where you were sitting again?" And this participant was like, "No." But she got it from where she was standing on the stage. And we turn this into a metaphor of you need to take a shot. Even if you don't make it to your final destination the first time, you get closer to where you want to be. So you've got to take the shot to make the shot.
The metaphor made
Wow,
it.
Sonny.
I didn't know if this worked.
Wow, that's so profound.
Oh, it was literally because, you know, like this conference is going to inspire people to look at a lot of different career paths, you know, and some of those are going to be harder than others, but some people get really discouraged when they miss the first time. But so often you're shooting for a new thing from miles away, and you've just got to edge a little bit closer every time by doing something. So I was so nervous about this, Hannah. And you know, Lou was busy doing other things backstage, and so you were the only person I could grab to come and basically die with me if it didn't work. But it was a, you know, it was an exercise to, you know, it was a fun way. It was a fun exercise to try and show something or you know, really emphasize the metaphor. But the there's been some comments from it, but this one was, you know, the ping pong ball demonstration was such a powerful message. It showed me that although some of my goals can feel overwhelming, very small and achievable changes can gradually move me on the right direction. And it was really encouraging reminder that progress doesn't have to be huge or meaningful. I'm on my way. Oh, we nailed that one.
I think also Theo might have
He really
reiterated that
emphasized,
as
yeah.
well, because there was a few people saying, you know, sometimes these things, these little moves, you know, you're not going to get a huge paycheck for them. You have to donate maybe a little bit of your time to get a little bit of experience in an area that's new and exciting. But if it's where you want to go, these little steps are so important.
Yeah, take a leap of faith sometimes, hey, and see where you end up, and don't be discouraged by it. But
Also, I
Interestingly,
remember that participant. She was from Vanuatu as well, wasn't she?
she was a former operations manager of that entire ambulance service. Her name's Judy. I worked with her 10 years ago several times in Vanuatu. She is an all-star. So to have chosen her ball out of there, out of 118 balls, was wild to actually catch up with her briefly on stage. But I mean, she's over here following another dream. You know, that's why she's in Australia now. So yeah, there's some crossovers. Theo also he did a practical demonstration with some new tools, and it's been interesting because I'm sharing all of this great feedback with you. We don't always get good feedback, and we also get some constructive feedback. And there's actually a real lean to it. We don't change things if we get one or two bits of feedback, but there's a real lean towards, is there a way that you can include some more practical components to respond, maybe even launch it a second day? And so it's something that we're genuinely going to have to look at, because the one practical demonstration obviously did appeal to people. So whilst we're balancing all these conversations and great questions and presentations around what we do in the profession, I think we also need to balance that with some of the really hard skills, the tangible skills that we can do. 2 days.
That's a really exciting space to move into.
Well, it is. I
For
mean,
next year, like that's something to sit on, to think about, and to work towards as well. Because if it's gonna get bigger and better, we gotta keep throwing our ping pong ball, don't we?
We've got to grow. Yeah, we got to throw the ping pong ball.
We gotta keep throwing the ping pong ball.
We're gonna have to find some new and creative ways to demonstrate some of these things. But moving into next year, I mean, we're going to launch Respond 27 quite soon, and there's going to be some similarities. There's going to be some changes. It's going to be, an exciting place, and we really believe that this space can grow. But it also comes from a place of, like you said at the start, vulnerability. What was the word you used? Intimidation. Was that the word? You felt
Yeah, it
intimidated.
was. Hannah used that.
Was that because you were out on stage?
Yeah, well, I remember on the day you were like, "Okay, Hannah, you're gonna walk out first." And I was like, "Okay."
Oh,
Yeah,
yes. That's because I didn't want to.
that sounds about right.
Little intimidating, but it was all good.
You pulled it
But
off.
you nailed it. You
Yeah,
did
you
such an incredible job.
pulled
You
it off
really
better than
did.
I could
Yeah, such
have.
imposter syndrome from you.
I feel like we're all cursed with a little bit of imposter syndrome. I feel like
Yeah,
sometimes it
it's
keeps us
good.
humble, like we keep learning from
Yeah,
ourselves and keep
I
like
agree.
you know, reflecting.
Imposter syndrome. Here's one of the biggest things that I want to actually policify. See, I don't know what the word is. Actually put it into respond policy.
You want to make it respond
Oh,
law.
yes,
Yeah.
is when
Yeah.
we unpack, we're trying to run a clinical conference differently. When we really unpack elements of it, there are some crossovers and there are some differences. But one of the big differences, I think, we've actually done a little bit indeliberately, and I want to do it deliberately moving forwards. I would estimate that 80% of our speakers would never submit an abstract to speak at a conference before this. Some would, and that's awesome. We need people who have the courage or the want to do it. But I would estimate a large chunk of our speakers from both 25 and 26 would never be the kind of people to submit an abstract or a request to speak. Now, moving forwards, the whole goal of this is to elevate people in the crowd, on the stage, even us, right? Quite a few of these speakers who would never have considered themselves speakers in the past have actually been in contact with us and said, I think I really want to speak again at something else. And we can't encourage them enough. Get out there and share your story and let's develop the profession together. But what I find really interesting is that when most of our speakers wouldn't be the people who want to speak, how was it successful, or why was it so impactful for so many people? And after watching so many of the shorts and, being involved in the conference and reading so much of the feedback, what I've come to the conclusion of is the speakers, because most of them wouldn't necessarily want to be up the front, they come to this with such humility. They come to it with less ego than so many other conferences I have been to. And that humility makes them human. It makes them relatable, and it makes people want to emulate who that person is as well. And that's where true mentoring actually comes from as well. And so what I want to do quite controversially is actually set up Respond where we don't actually accept abstracts. We don't accept self-nominations from speakers. Moving forwards, we will accept secondary nominations from people. So anyone who's listening to this, if there is someone out there who you think has a story to tell, whether it be, triggering or empowering or inspirational, if someone out there has a story to tell, we want to hear about them. We want to hear from you and we want to reach out to them and see if there is a way that we can pull some real learning from their experience. Whether they've got 25 years experience or 25 days experience, what we learned through Respond is that some of the most impactful speakers are actually some of the newest clinicians we have. And just with a little bit of encouragement, a little bit of structure, they actually became some of the most important speakers of the event as well. So, policify is the wrong word. It's not a word. You should have checked me on that, Lou, ages ago and said, no, Sonny, it's not a word. But, Hannah, I would
Let
like to
go.
implement moving into Respond 27 that it is secondary nominations for speakers. So, it is people who will be tapped on the shoulder to say, I've heard you've got a story, I've heard you've got an experience, and we would love to unpack it. What are your thoughts?
I'm all for it. I think, the ones that are self-nominating, nothing against them, but I do think you got to question their motives sometimes as well. And I think bringing it back to Respond and what it's about creating experiences for people that they can actually relate to. So we want people to come and speak who are humans just like us and have that humility and people that we can relate to and feel like we're standing next to or in the trenches together. You know what I mean? So I think, we are very cautious of accepting abstracts because, I think some of the best speakers are the ones that don't want to get up and speak. And we saw that at Respond. A lot of the people backstage were really nervous, but the ones that were, they nailed it
What are you
and
talking
they did
about? The three
such a good job.
hosts were nervous.
Oh my gosh. I felt like I was fighting a fire the whole day, like just fighting for my life.
There's
But I don't
actually
think anyone would have been able to tell. What were you
there's
gonna
an
say?
irony to what I actually just suggested too, because if I actually now reflect on Hannah, would you have ever applied to be a host?
No.
Yeah,
And
I wouldn't
look
have.
at how you did such a fantastic job. And I didn't really, oh, guys, I didn't get a say in this matter, just so everyone knows. Sonny
You're
didn't
just
give me a
like, oh,
choice. I
Lou,
had to
you're doing
talk.
it.
Yeah.
Lou had
No.
no choice.
I definitely wouldn't have put my hand up for it. And I'm really glad that you guys tapped me on the shoulder to do it. And I'm really glad that I took the chance to do it. I mean, I was sitting there some nights going like, I don't know, I'm not qualified for this. I don't have all these like connections in this creative world, of our new creative careers world. And I was sitting here, but I had the best time. And I felt vulnerable. I felt
Intimidated.
intimidated. I had a lot of imposter syndrome.
And
But
now, and
I
now.
had so much fun. I had so much fun that I went ahead and I said yes. And I threw my ping pong and it landed a little bit closer for the
Nice.
final.
Nice.
Oh
And I think
dear,
that's it. That's it. Like saying yes is like the most powerful thing that you can do as well. Just say yes. If someone asks you, be a yes man. It's going to feel very uncomfortable, but just do it.
I feel like this ping pong thing is going to thematicize over the next couple of years. And I think I just want to, if we manage to grow this conference to even, 300 or 400 people, I just want to launch 300 or 400 ping pong balls as a demonstration because it looked cool.
It would look cool. The environment wouldn't thank us for it, but hey, we'll reuse them for next year.
We will. We will recycle and reuse.
So
Folks.
Sunny,
Yeah.
where
Oh,
can
yeah.
they, so for people that do want to contact us and say, hey, I've got this mentor or this friend or whoever it might be, how can they go about contacting us to let us know?
Look, we're across social media, so we're on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. We may go on TikTok soon, I just don't know. But find us on social media. The reason why I'm hesitant to hand out an email right now is because we are just going to tidy things up and really bring this back to Respond conferences. So you will see a new website quite soon. You will see a new email address quite soon, but our social medias will always be there. So if you've got a speaker, please reach out. Also, if you like some of the shorts you're going to see, if you're curious about what we do and how we educate, please come to Respond 27. These events only happen if people get behind them and support them. And if you, are part of a business that would benefit from affiliation or involvement, we are also seeking sponsors again this year. We really couldn't have run 26 without our sponsors. APAC, the Australian Paramedic Association Queensland, were a huge sponsor and really supportive of getting behind us for this. And also my MediQuip. Really, many thanks to both of them. And certainly the Academy of Extreme Environment Medicine was our main funder for 26. So without those three major sponsors, we really couldn't have run this event. And it was obviously such a powerful experience for so many people, not just the participants, but for the speakers and for the sponsors and everyone involved. So please get behind 27 if you think it's something that you're going to be interested in. Lou, we're going to be running some more podcasts over this season. We're going to be bringing in some of these speakers. You
We
and Hannah
are.
are going to exclude me from some of them. I'm going to exclude you from some of them. And we're just going to create as many conversations as we can to explore the depths of pre-hospital care. Hannah, what did I say wrong?
Oh,
I saw
what do
you.
you
I saw you
mean?
frown at me.
She was
Roll
laughing at
my
me
eyes.
saying that we want to exclude you because we're sick of hearing you
It's because
talk.
I'm still trying to cough.
Yeah. Well, Sunny, could you just die quietly in
I
the
need
corner?
to.
Could you
I've got the
just.
tape. I'm just going to tape my mask.
Yeah,
Oh, folks, if you like what you heard,
Welcome to
find
the
us across
Shift
all our social media
Extension
platforms.
podcast.
We're online, we're on the podcast, and we are also going to be at Respond 27. Here is something for people to do.